Did you know that you can tap into a power greater than yourself as you're going through challenges in life and uncertainty, and you can step into these powerful archetypes in order to become a new version of yourself and tap into hidden skills, hidden traits within yourself that will allow you to move through challenges with success? And you can do this by tapping into goddess archetypes. And it was Carl Jung's research that was first aware of these archetypes that show up in the feminine consciousness in society. And they still exist to this day. And the book Goddess Within expands on this research to really give you an insight into the goddess archetypes that show up most in modern women today. And goddesses will help you to really embody different parts of yourself that are needed to come to the surface and show you what is in the way of you being able to step into your power. And each one has a specific wound. And that's why we need all of the goddesses to become our whole self. Well, I've created a quiz that will help you learn what your goddess archetype is currently, the one that is most alive within you, as well as the complementary goddess archetype that you need in order to move through this next stage of your life. And this can be very personal to you based on the stage of life that you're at. And just know that the goddess you're strongest in is an insight, and you already have her at her strongest power. So it's not about trying to embody these traits more. It just gives you insight into where you are at currently, and the complementary goddess will help you balance out what skills are needed, what traits and ways of being and energy are needed. And this quiz will really invite you into these six goddess archetypes and tapping into their energy. So with your quiz results, you will get a Pinterest inspiration board, which will have rituals, images, and other symbols to evoke her energy and connect to this goddess. And it'll be so interesting for you to learn your goddess and see how this shows up in your life, as well as other goddesses, and when they've showed up in your own life, your friend's life, and the other women that you know. So you can take the quiz at goddesstype.com. This is linked in the show notes, and you'll receive your results with a long write-up about your goddess type, what strengths she has, and what strengths she needs to embody at this next stage. So you can find that at goddesstype.com, linked in the episode description. Let's get back to our episode. Welcome back to the podcast. Thank you so much for being here. Today, we have a powerful episode on navigating change and uncertainty. And I don't know about you, but I think when I have navigated change and uncertainty, my first initial reaction, just like most humans, is resistance and an emotional reaction of, maybe it's unwanted change, or maybe it's realizing a chapter is closing when you're not ready for that yet. And today's episode, we're going to have a great conversation on how we can navigate change and uncertainty by really managing our emotions towards this change and resetting our mindset and our self-concept. And I have learned so much already from starting to read this guest episode's book. And I know you are going to learn so much too. And so today we have Linda Rossetti. She is a business leader, Harvard MBA, and pioneering social entrepreneur who is dedicated to changing how we respond to career and personal upheaval. She's the author of two books, her new one, Dancing with Disruption and Women and Transition. And she has been featured in numerous outlets, including NPR, CBS WZ, Next Avenue, Money Magazine, and Thrive Global. She hosts a podcast, Destination Unknown, and she is also the creator of a groundbreaking emotional reframing technique called HAIL, which we talk about, that addresses the intense emotional response we all experience in the wake of major changes. Linda also leads the Transition Institute LLC, whose mission is to advance the research and practice of successful individual and organizational transformation. And you can learn more about Linda and her work on LinkedIn or through her website, lindarossetti.com, which is linked in the show notes, or her Instagram and Facebook at Linda Rossetti Author. And Linda has generously offered a giveaway for a copy of her new book, which we go deeper into in this episode. So listen through to the end to hear her giveaway and how to enter that. Enjoy today's episode, and I hope it serves you. If it does, please share with a friend, leave a rating and review. Enjoy this episode. So welcome to the podcast, Linda. I am thrilled to have you here. Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, Emily, thank you for hosting me. I'm excited for our conversation.
Me too. Yeah, so I had the opportunity to so you speak at a West event, and I know that you recently came out with a book called Dancing with Disruption, which I just love that title and really speaks to how to move through transition in this dance. And I'd love to hear from you, what inspired you to write this book?
Well, you know, it came out of a bunch of research that I've done over the last decade. You know, more than a decade ago, I found myself in this career crisis moment. And I really struggled to find resources to help me think about what was happening and how I might be able to move forward from there. And I really didn't find much of anything that I thought spoke to the enormity of what I was feeling. And it was one of those moments where I'm like, wait a minute, is this who I want to be? Like, it was a major crisis. And that was at, 25 years in doing, very intense corporate work. And that inability to find the answer inspired me to do some research. And after a decade of research with more than 300 adults, all of whom were working full-time jobs, I kind of got to the point that said, wait a minute, we really misunderstand these moments where there are shifts in how we think about ourselves, whether that's our careers, maybe we have a breakup, we have a health crisis, we have, a milestone like a birthday, or we welcome a child, or we have an empty nest, like whatever these milestones are, the research convinced me that we really misunderstand them, and that those who are able to think differently and respond differently to them can have a positive inflection point in their lives. And so the research was shocking, and it kind of said, wait a minute, we all go left when we really should be going right. And that really inspired me to write the book, because I've learned so much in connecting with others who are at these moments where they had the courage to ask themselves questions. And it's fascinating to look at the patterns within those who respond in a certain way. And my work really now is about educating people on what that means and trying to inspire them to take good steps.
Beautiful. And yeah, it's so interesting that you said, most of us and what you found in your research view this change as something negative. And would you say even with transitions and the transition you went through with your career, that we make it mean something about our identity? Is that what also is part of that?
Yeah, there's two things in that question. So let me pick them apart just a teeny bit. One is, yes, we are conditioned in our society to like hang negative off of these moments of uncertainty in our lives, right? We think of them as failures, or we convince ourselves that we have some kind of deficit, or there's a loss, right? There's all of these things. I remember when it happened to me, my first thought is, what's wrong with me? Like, there must be something wrong with me. I wasn't functioning in the way that I always had. And so, first summary is, yes, we are so prone, right? We're taught in society that when we encounter a transition, or, we go through a disruption of some sort, that we think of it negatively, and we needn't, right? Because what my research showed was that these things are very common. In fact, they're very normal, even in those who have this outward kind of projection of success. It happens even to those people. It happens to everyone. Mm-hmm. And so I want to normalize the experience, right? And then the other part of your question was really about, is it something that we should, think about as a success or a failure? And it isn't really binary, is what I've learned, right? That these moments are really invitations to have a new conversation about what's happening. And I think that, Emily, that's where some of my work has been most interesting, because before I started this work, I didn't have the right vocabulary. And now, with some new vocabulary, I can help people place their experience of instability or uncertainty in a new context. So all of a sudden it takes the fear factor way down, and they can open themselves up to a new kind of conversation that can lead to really fantastic things.
Okay, that is so helpful, because exactly, I think what so many people experience, like you said, we're conditioned to frame this in a negative way, but also, you know, anxiety really comes up when there's uncertainty. What you're teaching is about reframing this uncertainty into possibility and turning the fear factor down, which then allows us to see options, to see a path forward. Whereas when the fear is there, it just can overwhelm us, right?
Absolutely. We get stopped by the emotions. And so part of the book, right, I'll say just a minute about the book. The first part of the book is really education, right? Telling us how to think about these moments, right? I not only did I do one-on-one interviews with people, I also went and looked at all of the scholarly research on this, right? So there's kind of the science of human development and new vocabulary in the first part of the book. And then the second part of the book are a series of four techniques that I introduced to people that I found through my research. When I took 80 people out of my 300 that talked to me in general, 80 of them agreed to participate in these exercises where I would give them these tools and they would test them out. And then they'd come back to me and tell me what they, you know, if they worked or not. And so this group helped me refine these four tools. And one of the tools is really an emotional reframing tool that is really life-changing, right? People that continue to use it today, it's fascinating, because it can take fear and really diffuse it, right? Like release its power over us and allow us to keep moving. Even though the fear might still be there, it isn't able to kind of stifle us or kind of staple our feet to the floor. And that's key, because as you know, I mean, any of us who've been in these moments where it's like, wait a minute, like my identity is somehow, you know, corrupted or broken, it doesn't make sense anymore. And that can happen in our occupational self, it can happen in our relationships, it can happen in our faith or spirituality, it can happen in physicality, like we used to be able to do certain things mobility wise. Any of those pieces of who we are can be involved in this. And when that happens, our emotions mobilize, right? When our emotional system reads a break in a familiar way we think about ourselves, our emotions fire to try to make us safe. Like, so they try to staple us to the ground. And so, you know, this is an awfully long-winded answer to your question, I'm sorry, but there's this excellent research from the 70s from this gentleman, his name was Jack Mesereau from Columbia University. And he did a lot of really early work on what happens when adults go through these periods of shifts in their identity. And he said, you know, there's two levels of solutions that need to come to play when somebody navigates these times, right? One is the very practical, you know, okay, I used to be a physician or a physical therapist or a teacher, and I'm not going to be that anymore. What am I going to be, right? That's a very practical level. But there's this other level, which is how do you navigate the intense emotional response to the change? And so my work in the back of the book handles both of those, both the practical and the emotional response. And I find that the combination of those two types of techniques is very important for people to be able to succeed. And as you mentioned before, to really lean into the promise of what these inflection points can be, because that's really the beautiful thing that, you know, when I look across all the people who participated in my research, those who were able to use these techniques and go forward got to places in their lives they never even imagined, like beyond their dreams.
Yeah, that's incredibly helpful to hear what happens as a result of viewing these changes differently, of having these tools that you share and that you've created to manage our emotions. It's because I think the frustration comes up when you think something is going one way and then, you know, you thought you had it figured out and then, you know, you're being pointed to a new direction. And that's when you can be open to that and be receptive. And I think we're in massive times of change and disruption. And we've had that with the pandemic and the aftermath. And I'd love to know, what is the difference about your lens into disruption with these societal changes, with the direction we're going in?
Well, I think, you know, there's one way to think about that I think might be interesting for your listeners, right? You know, I look at disruption as a break in our self-concept, right? The way we think about ourselves, right? That can be, some people use the word identity. I find identity to be like a big, heavy word. I'm kind of afraid of it, all in all honesty, right? But it's how we think about ourselves. When there's a break in that, you know, it can be because we're no longer connected to the work we thought we would love, or we've had a relationship breakup, or we've survived cancer, and all of a sudden we're like disconnected from all the things that used to hold meaning to us, right? There are a million ways where we can have these disruptive breaks. And what I found in my research is that we often use two vocabulary words interchangeably, and those are change and transition. And when we're in the wake of a disruption, like a break in our sense of self, those two terms mean very different things, right? Changes at those times are really about a fixed self-concept and making alterations or variations on that self-concept. For example, I'm a brunette and maybe I just get tired of being brunette and I decide I'm going to be a blonde, right? I decide to change my hair color, right? How I think about myself, my fixed is fixed, right? Like there's an intact sense of self and I'm making alterations or variations that I think are right-minded, right? That is what is involved in change. But when we choose transitions in the wake of a disruption, what we're doing is we're acknowledging that there's a shift in what holds value and meaning to us. And our self-concept at that time is shifting, right? We're re-examining the assumptions that we use to define who we are and how we make meaning in the world, right? So it's about, transitions are about welcoming instability for a time. Right. It's about an unknown outcome, right? We're willing to say, maybe I need to rethink this. We may not know the answer about where we're going, but we know we need to entertain those questions, right? So it's, those two concepts are really different in my research, right? Not only do I focus on disruption as a break in our sense of self or our thinking about who we are, but I also look at both change as a response and transition as a response as very different things, right? Changes basically say, you know, yep, I'm making an alteration or a variation, but there's a fixed self-concept. And transitions say, you know what? Wait a minute, something doesn't feel right. I'm going to recognize that there might be a shift in what holds value or meaning to me, and I'm going to explore that a bit. And that's kind of welcoming some instability. And that's what's really involved in transitioning. And it's really those who are willing to explore transitioning, right, that have this transformational promise. And in that is where we can really tool people to have positive inflection points in their lives.
That's incredibly helpful to have the awareness around what's happening when transition comes up, because I think that if you don't recognize it, it can feel destabilizing. It can feel uncertain, and you know, everything that you did hold meaning doesn't hold meaning anymore, or it's shifted. And then, you know, that's where your emotions get triggered to help you move towards stability. And I think it's helpful to, you know, see that it's happening and then ask yourself those questions of, okay, I can look at this in a new way. And I think it's going to be, and already is, especially important for leaders to be able to respond to change and transition this way, because, you know, they lead other people and other people depend on them for their leadership and their support. Right. And if they are unable to, you know, recognize change when it's happening or transition, and they kind of cling to the old, I think that's maybe a lot of what we've seen maybe in the last few years, but it's really not helpful to, I think that's the default, you know, stick to what you know, go back to what you know. And I know in my own life transitions, I've tried that, and, you know, it doesn't really always offer the growth that you're looking for. And, you know, there are so many inspiring stories in your book. Which one do you think really brings home this idea of responding differently to disruption?
Well, you know, I think there are a couple that I love. I mean, I love them all, right? So the whole book, you know, it's not like a lecture on a page. The whole book is just full of these stories. And I use these stories to illustrate this learning from my research. And so this is one gentleman who I interview. His name is Arthur. And he sits down next to me. I interviewed him out on the West Coast, and he sat down and I asked him, you know, what this whole process was all about for him. And he looked at me and he said, "I see so much more now." And I was so fascinated by those words, because Arthur was somebody who had lost his sight more than a decade ago, right? And yet he was saying, "Look, I see so much more now." And I think that what's so powerful about his illustration of what happened as he navigated this transformational period in his life is that he, in the beginning, responded with change, right? He said, "Look, I have a degenerative eye condition. And when I began to lose my sight, I was clinging to a self-concept that said, I want to exist in the sighted world." Mm. And I kept taking things away. "Oh, I can't see that anymore. I can't do that anymore." And he said, "You know, my world became very small." And ultimately, there was a series of events that happened that kind of popped him over to the transition side. And he said, "You know, I realize now that this has nothing to do with my sight. This has to do with how I see myself and my connection to the value that I can bring in the world." And mm-hmm. I think that, you know, his story was so powerful because, you know, he sat next to me and he said, "Linda, you know, I don't know what you have on. I have no idea what you look like." You know, he said, "But I see things so differently." And I think that regardless of our circumstances, that is the opportunity we're talking about when we're invited to explore something more when we hit a disruption. It's like, are we willing to explore our own voice? And I don't mean what's audible, what you hear me say. It's our truth and how that truth can become aligned with who we are in this world. And I think that that's the invitation that I'm talking about when I think about disruption and what's possible. You know, it's this, you know, this gentleman who's sitting next to me who can't see a lick saying, "I see much more now," right? It's this entirely new way of knowing ourselves and the world we inhabit. And I think that that's what, you know, people say, "Linda, what do you do?" It's like, well, I think I'm a social entrepreneur because I'm trying to get people to respond differently to this mm-hmm. very common thing that we all run away from. Or if we don't run away, we really misunderstand mm-hmm. it. And if we change the way we respond, we could all be Arthur.
Wow. That's incredibly inspiring. I mean, to be in that type of transition, in that type of circumstance, and to move to a place of being able to see more, being open. And, you know, it almost sounds like there's this excitement of like, what's next, you know, instead of, oh no, like dread.
Exactly. Oh, exactly. Right. Because, you know, we all get in those patterns. It's like, oh no, what is going to be next? And I think that, you know, what I'm learning, and I think you referenced it already, Emily, we're in this kind of persistent state of disruption in the post-pandemic world, right? Our mm-hmm. workplaces are like in a constant state of chaos, you know, reorg this, you know, all sorts of pressure, you know, people leaving, not being able to rehire, this and that. And everything else in life. And I think this notion of really having a new conversation about disruption is so important, both in the workplace as well as outside the workplace, because we can get to really different results, right? And I love Arthur's story. That's one of many in the book. They're all so good. I had the great good pleasure of sitting down with all these incredible people who shared with me their experience. And while people say, "Well, wait a minute, I'm not somebody who's lost my sight, you know, I'm not sight impaired," I do want to just make sure people understand is that while our circumstances differ, the patterns in how we respond to shifts, like to disruptions, are incredibly similar. So it doesn't matter if, you know, your disruption is about, you know, a crummy boss who's like just wreaking havoc in your work life, or if it's about, you know, like I said before, like a physical change that now you're not able to do something that you always did and it's so much a part of you. Like, our circumstances will differ, but the patterns on how we need to respond have a stunning amount of similarity.
That is really helpful, because that was going to be my next question of, you know, the people that you were talking to and the research that you're doing, it sounds like they're from all different walks of life. And I think that that's incredibly helpful to understand. And I think that's something, that feeling when you're going through a transition, that you're alone and that no one understands. And it's just like your unique situation. And it's, you're saying these patterns are really common no matter what we're facing.
Yes, and I don't want to diminish that, you know, our circumstances are unique, right? We all have, you know, a unique blend of things that we are responsible for in our lives, and we're carrying burdens, right? You know,
yeah.
I'll never forget, there was this, you know, one very young girl, you know, not very young, I mean, she was in her early 20s, and she had survived some incredible trauma, right? And while she wanted to be held and embraced for that experience, and I so honor that, her experience of disruption was exactly equal to somebody else who was going through an unexpected layoff, or somebody else who, right? The patterns of disruption and how we respond really are common. And we don't have that vocabulary in our society. We think it's a one-off, right? So when it happens to us, we typically draw inward, right? And we have emotions like shame or fear because we're not sure what's happening, right? We don't have that context that we talked about earlier, our ability to place what's happening with us in a familiar set of understanding. Because if we can, all of a sudden the fear just dissipates. We're like, okay, all right, now I see, I need to make X, Y, or Z decision. And it doesn't mean the fear goes away, but we can be with that fear in a really different way.
Yes. Okay. That's very helpful, because from your description, it sounds like you're not really going in that direction of taking it personally and making it mean something about yourself. It's being able to see, okay, here's what I can do next, instead of going down the shame spiral. And I love what you said too, of, you know, in society, we don't have the language around this. And I actually was interviewing someone on my podcast yesterday talking about, they specialize in grief and that transition. And it was very similar. You know, we don't have the language, the space in society of grief. And I'm sure grief does come up in this type of transition and growth and change too. So I think it's really incredibly powerful, the work that you're doing on both the individual level and the societal level as well. And I know that you also teach this to companies, and you have experience managing massive change and transitions in companies as well, right?
I do, right? So before doing this work, I was EVP of HR and administration at a very large global corporation called Iron Mountain. And when I went in, you know, I was reporting to the CEO. We were a $3.5 billion company. We had 21,000 people in 37 countries around the world, right? It's a massive organization. And we as an organization had been created through more than 200 acquisitions. And one of my and my team's job was to make it operate as one Iron Mountain, right? So it was an enormous cultural and human capital transformation process. And it took us years, right? So, you know, I bring a very practical lens into this notion of major shifts, right? So the work that I do is very practical for the individual's experience, but also in organizations. And there is something I teach. I train coaches, right? I certify coaches on the methods on how to help people, you know, support others in transformation. And one of the techniques that we've kind of alluded to a couple of times already in the conversation is this emotional reframing technique that I teach a lot of corporate teams, right? Because if we can have an ability to reset and get a team focused after, let's say there's, you know, a peer who's just a barrel of bad behavior, right? They're the source of a lot of conflict on the team. It distracts everyone. You know, the deliverables get delayed because this person just kind of sets off, you know, emotional firestorms everywhere, right? And so this technique, HAIL, is really intended to help people reset around emotions, right? So it's this four-step mnemonic, and HAIL, the word H-A-I-L, each of the four letters stands for a different step in the process. Mm-hmm. And so it's as if, Emily, if you and I like went out onto the sidewalk right now and I said, okay, Emily, let's draw this skyscraper that's in front of us. And, you know, you got to work and do the skyscraper. And then I said, okay, come. And we went across the street and we went up in the elevator of a neighboring building and we went to the roof. And I said, okay, Emily, now let's draw that same skyscraper, right? You would have an entirely different perspective on it. Mm-hmm. And this technique, HAIL, allows people to reframe emotions, right? To basically take an emotion like fear or rage or shame or regret or anger or sadness or perfectionism, right? That's a good one too, right? It can be any kind of an emotion, and really rethink it and really try to say, hang on, this emotion might be able to help me in a different way. And I always describe it as if, you know, sadness is an emotion that's always big in me. It has a lot of history in my experience. And it is as if like I was hanging on the end of a rope most days, that is sadness. And it can like swing me around, switch ways, willy-nilly, you know, kind of, you know, it's in charge when it shows up. Right. And this technique, Hale, is one that allows me to like drop the rope that is sadness on the ground next to me, right? I see it, it's here, but its ability to have power over me is completely diffused. Right. It can't switch me around. Right. It can't send me in a direction one way or another. It's here. And I understand its meaning for me, but it no longer has power over me. And that is the goal of the work in the book about emotions. It's really trying to say, look, let's honor these emotions. Shame is an important emotion. Fear is an important emotion. What happens if we might be able to reframe them? Because they may become oracles instead of obstacles to our progress.
Oh, I love that. Oracles instead of obstacles. Wow. I like that you're saying that the emotions still get to exist and be seen and recognized, but the power doesn't have to overtake you in sadness. I can relate to that one as well. It does feel like, you know, this wet blanket that's on top of you and you can't do anything about it. But I think this tool, which sounds incredible, is helping to recognize the emotion, see that it's there, and then, you know, put it down and just say, okay, I'm going to continue moving on. And I think that could be incredibly useful in the corporate space and within teams, because like you said, there are no ways to currently deal with emotions and we're all human.
Exactly, right? You know, I've led teams my whole life and it's amazing, you know, how half the time my days can be filled with teammates coming in and saying, oh, I just got to tell you about Susie Q. You know, she's getting in the way, and like, and then it pents up all this emotion. And you know, this is really a platform that allows us to be with emotions in an entirely new way. And it does allow for, you know, connected to your earlier question, it invites us to connect our emotions to bigger meaning in our own individual experience, but it doesn't amplify that. That isn't the end of the tool. That's a part of the tool, but it draws us beyond that so that we can actually really, you know, push to saying, boy, I wonder what this emotion might be able to teach me, because its presence is powerful. And it really can be a kind of a divining rod for us, depending on where we are in our transformation.
That's beautiful. And I think that's really helpful to learn from our emotions instead of when they come up, you know, being frustrated or, you know, I think you've talked about this as well in your work about burnout and, you know, is that really ignoring these emotions and continuing on? Like, what's the balance between recognizing the emotion, but also continuing to move forward with power?
Well, you know, I think that, I wish I had a beautiful answer for that, but what I can tell you from my work is that, it's easy to list the emotions that appear oppositional for us, right? You know, if there's a day when we say, hang on, I just can't make any progress. And if I said, okay, let's name the emotions that are present for us today, that's pretty easy, right? We can identify the oppositional emotions. And then the challenge is can we do that reframing? Can we go up in the skyscraper across the street and look at those same emotions that we list, that we honor, we give them kind of space and time. We say, hello, regret, hello, anxiety, hello, shame, hello, fear, right? Let's just call them out. Like, okay, you're here. We're not going to judge you. We're just recognizing that you're at the party with us. And then if we use some of the tools to reframe them, it's amazing how powerful they can be in helping us ask new questions of ourselves. And I think that's really the beauty of really being thoughtful about the disruptions and our response to them, because ultimately it's, can we get ourselves out of the same kind of stimulus response pattern that we're always in and help ask a new question, right? So if we can bring ourselves to a new question, we can do backflips like all the way home, because we unlock energy that's kind of gated. And so, you know, like there's another story in my book. Do we have a minute for me to tell it? Yes. Is it all right?
Definitely.
There's this lovely woman. She was like 34. Her name was Lakshmi. And she started her story to say, you know, I was at this MD PhD program in the Midwest, very prestigious Big Ten university. And she said, all of a sudden I realized this isn't who I want to be. And she said, you don't understand. She said, I have been dreaming of this. Like, it's the only, I've never even dreamed outside of this identity that I've spent like 12 years creating. And so she was terrified. You know, she's like, this was alarming because I didn't know how to be outside of this whole construct that I had delivered to myself. And it was so interesting. She said, you know, and I even ignored my instincts when I knew it wasn't working. And she said, I ignored them for so long. And she said, then all of a sudden I started getting these really debilitating headaches. And she's somebody who was just like very physically fit, and she was very self-aware from like a physical energetic kind of standpoint. And she said, you know, I kept asking myself, what does my body know that I don't know yet? Like that I don't have in my kind of conscious like knowledge. And so ultimately she came to this point of saying, you know, I have to go through this enormous transformation. Like there's no other choice for me. And it was crushing. Because everyone, she's like, you know, when I was little, the way I got responded to was being this smart person who was on this track to go be this MD, PhD. She's like, so I didn't even know how to respond to other people. And so she decided to kind of do a little sideways step. And a lot of people do this in major transitions. She got kind of like a sustaining job. She went to AmeriCorps to teach a little for a year, just to give herself some time to catch her breath. And through that, she started to get involved in some other programs that she really loved. Like she put together, she was a bilingual woman, and she put together this program to help families who needed to get at health resources, even if English wasn't their first language. And so she got involved in these communities that she really loved. And she said, you know, the fascinating thing is, she said, I'm interacting with other people, and I'm realizing more of who I am from my interactions with them. And she said, you know, my colleagues were telling me that I was funny and I was a good leader. And she said, this was stunning to me. She said, I never thought of myself in either of those two ways. And so I use that story. It's told in much more detail in the book, as is Arthur's, much better in the book. But I tell that to say, you know, when we are willing to honor these shifts in our lives, we go through a pattern that is common, regardless of what instigated that shift. And it is through these that we really get this deeper connection to who we are. And we're able to turn up the volume on our own voices in a way that is enlivening and joyful and incredibly free. And I don't mean that like, whoo, free, I'm not going to have any responsibilities. It's operating in a place where we're not constraining who we are. We're being who we are. And that allows us to be in service to others in entirely new ways.
Wow, that is so beautiful. And I think my listener can probably relate to going down this path in your career and not even realizing you're doing it for other people's approval, and then realizing, wait a second, this isn't actually what I want. And then how to turn up the volume on your own voice. And that's a whole transition in and of itself. And I loved what you touched on earlier. If we don't ask ourselves the questions or give ourselves the space, then these emotions that could help us get through the transition are behind these gates, and that being open to them and talking about them with people. I think we also want to isolate in these times and in these ways. And I think that what you're saying is to be going and sharing with the people around you what you're going through is how you actually can step up and allow these parts of yourself, these new parts of you, emerge that overcome the transition. Is that right?
Absolutely. And I'm smiling. That's the one bummer of this, you know, this medium. People can't see me smiling, because one of the four techniques, right, the back of the book goes through these four things that we need to successfully navigate these transformational periods. And one of it is reconstituting the connections that are around us. This notion of what is that community that needs to be with us, and who are they? Where do we find them? Particularly, where do we find them when we're at a place like, wait a minute, I've been a, you know, I'm like Lakshmi, I've been an MD, PhD for a long time, but I don't want to do that anymore. Like, where do I find my new people? And it's at those, you know, and so one of the whole chapters gives these techniques on how to do that. You know, so I think that my goal in doing this work is to help people understand really what's happening about transitions, and what's happening is, I'll come back to that in a minute. And then the second part of the book is to give people these techniques that they can use to begin the conversation for themselves, and then work with yourself and others, you know, to help them really accelerate these processes, because they're so enlivening and useful in our lives. And it's funny, you know, when I started this work, I thought transitions were about leaving something, like, oh, I'm in a transition, I lost a job, or I've left a relationship, or I've, you know, I've left a geography, or, you know, whatever. There's so many things we could put it, fill in the blank. And now what I learn is that while all of those kind of event-driven things can be a part of our transformational journey, they're not required to be. You can actually transform yourself right where you're sitting, not leaving anything. Because the one common denominator that came out of all my research is that our voice is the one common denominator for transformation, that we are in a process, right? We are being invited to make a deeper connection to our voice. And I use the word voice as a representation of our truth, right? We are being invited again and again to connect more clearly to our truth. And and that's like not a one swing of the bat, like, oh yeah, I'm going to do that tomorrow. Woo, here we go, right? It's really an iterative process. And it first is becoming aware of our voice. And I don't mean to say that that's simple, because for many of us, we, you know, like Lakshmi, she had always adopted from others what she was supposed to be. And at 34, needed to say, well, wait a minute, I don't know that that fits me, right? So this notion of becoming aware is the first step. And then we have a choice of whether or not and how, frankly, we want to live in alignment with that voice. And that's a whole other set of questions, right? You know, so it's a beautiful, you know, process, and it has so many, you know, paths, but the common denominator here is really bringing our awareness to voice and inviting ourselves to trust it and to live in alignment with it. And that's when, you know, the floodgates open wide, and you know, we have this joyful existence that again can happen right where we're sitting today. We don't necessarily have to leave, but we can. You know, we can choose to make loads of changes along the way. But the transformations that I've seen that are most productive really all involve voice.
That is incredible, and I think it's helpful to hear too. It's like this new part of yourself wants to come through, and how do you take the steps to bring that into alignment? And there's the practical piece of like the people around you that reflect this voice, this new voice that wants to come through. And I can really get a sense that your book has the stories that help you connect and see these changes in people's lives, and the research you did, and then the tools to put it into place and help it all come together. And I think it's really also just realistic to see that this happens multiple times in your life. Like you said, you don't need to leave something or something need to change without this new part of yourself, these new values, this new voice that wants to come through. So these tools can help you move through it quicker and not have this resistance and the pain and the suffering piece, and just recognize like, okay, this is what's happening. Here's how I can move through.
It's so true, right? And that's why I think I go back to the first question you asked me, which is why did I write the book, right? I wrote Dancing with Disruption to start that conversation that you just beautifully summarized, because it really is, you know, if we're willing to kind of open ourselves up to a new way of thinking about this, the benefits can be, you know, beyond imagine, right? Beyond reason.
Yes, like what you're saying, this is like societal change and social change, and how it starts on the individual level, but it also is reflected in our work environments and worldwide in every way possible. And I think it'll just help for people to to become more of who they are through the process, and to do it in a way that feels supportive and held. And I can really sense that with these tools and the structure in your book. It's like, okay, here's a path that I can use, and I don't have to feel lost and uncertain and flailing and struggling when it's like, no, here's what you can do. And here's it really just takes that reframe and that, you know, awareness that these things are there. And I know you have another book as well, right? Is that called Women in Transition?
Right. Women and Transition was written in 2015. And and that was a precursor to this. It had to do with a lot of my early research. Yeah. And you know, so Dancing with Disruption, which is the more recent book, you know, really, really builds on what I learned early on and puts a lot more research onto it. And I added men into the research, right? So there's all sorts of individuals who are in the book. And, you know, so yes, it's been a continuum in my world, you know, as I've grown into this topic. And like you, I can see the value, right? It can help us as individuals make great choices in our lives. It can help us as leaders be great leaders, right? I am a very different leader because of this work that I've done, right? I'm very different with teams. And, you know, I've had the great good fortune of being in, you know, executive roles, and I'm such a different leader because of this. And then, you know, I think all of us are so committed to this moment in the world as a societal moment, right? This is a moment of major opportunity. We have to reset so much of our thinking, whether it's on climate or immigration or, you know, justice and equity and inclusion and so much. And I think that this kind of conversation that we've had today can really help on all of those dimensions.
Absolutely. It sounds like this is a way to manage and like steer the ship through the change and the crumbling away of what was working, you know, at one point doesn't work in today's world, and how to do that with direction and with clarity, with meaning and intention behind your actions. And that is going to result in positive change and evolvement for everyone. And I'm excited to check out the new book and Women in Transition as well. I cannot wait to read. And I'd love to know, where can my listener find you online and connect with you and learn more?
Yes. So the easiest way to probably get me is at LinkedIn, right? So the hardest thing is spelling my last name, right? Because my last name has two S's and two T's, and I think it's in your show notes.
Yes.
But I will say that the easiest way to get me is just pop me a message on LinkedIn. You're welcome to visit my website. It has lots of resources and there's a contact place there. But I'd love to hear from anyone. I'm more than happy to share resources. And if you'd like to join my newsletter, I have lots of events, you know, a lot of free events that people can attend. And the other thing I'll say, can I talk about a little giveaway that we're going to do, Emily?
Yes.
Do you mind?
Yes.
So for the week after this show airs, if you would just send me an email or just a message by LinkedIn referencing this show, we'll put you in the running for a free giveaway of the book. And I'll be happy to mail you a signed copy of the physical book. And I hope you really enjoy it, because Dancing with Disruption is lovely. It's a lovely, inspiring read. And it's also a great gift. I've got now given it to so many people I know who are going through difficult times. And it really is a little beacon. So, you know, just drop me a note within a week of this show's airing, and then hopefully I will be sending you a note congratulating you on winning a book, and I will be needing your address to make sure it gets to you.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Linda, for your generosity. And for my listener, be sure to reach out to Linda to be entered in this giveaway and get her amazing book. And Linda, thank you so much for coming on and talking with me. I know from our conversation, I am excited for change and knowing that there's tools and ways forward that allow us to be with our emotions and accept them and see them and continue moving. So I'm excited for the future, and this conversation has got me excited. So thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us.
Emily, thank you for having me, and to all of your listeners as well. I appreciate being able to join you all in conversation, and I'm cheering for you. It's going to be great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have mindset work and affirmations only taken you so far in your ability to attract your desires into your reality? Do you find that you struggle to have faith before your desired manifestations show up? And do you have a sense that there's something that's holding you back, something you're not conscious of, some subconscious belief deep within that's stopping you from creating what you desire? And are you tired of having to hustle to bring your desires to life? And are you ready to attract and receive them instead? This self-guided embodied manifestation course will teach you the tools to envision, align, and embody your manifestations by attracting them from your natural way of being. In this self-guided online course, you'll learn the best tools, rituals, theories, and practical steps to consciously create all of your desires with your feminine energy for more flow, alignment, and ease. And by fully embodying your desire within and having solid faith in the universe that you're co-creating with, your desire appears in your external reality as a byproduct, and you become a magnet for it instead of the other way around. And yet there are so many obstacles in the way of this magnetism in the form of limiting beliefs, generational patterns, societal conditioning that holds you back, that live in the subconscious, in the nervous system, and the body. This course will teach you how to bring your vision down from the spiritual realm and into your entire being, ensuring your mind, body, emotions, and spirit are all in alignment with what you're calling in, so you can attract and call in your desires by embodying yourself fully, while clearing out anything in your body and nervous system that is in opposition to what you're manifesting, to create safety for it to arrive, for you to be able to receive it, whether that's a new home, a new soul-aligned career or business, a new partner, your next luxury vacation, you name it. Be the first to know when the course goes live in August by joining the waitlist. The waitlist will be linked in the episode description, so you can get on the waitlist there and you'll be the first to know when the course is released in August.